Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome to a very special edition of the Bill Press Pod, looking at the most critical problem facing the planet. Now, of course, for the last few days, the news has been all about the messy end to the war in Afghanistan. That's important. That'll have a lasting effect. But we can't get so tied up talking about Afghanistan that we ignore a much bigger problem, something far more important that'll have a far longer lasting impact. And of course, I'm talking about the frightening reality of climate change. In a report released by the United Nations last week, hundreds of scientists worldwide issued what they called a code red for humanity. There's no doubt that climate change is real, they argue. No doubt it's caused by human activity, especially the burning of fossil fuels, and no doubt it's getting far worse and a lot faster than anybody predicted. But, they conclude, there's still time to slow down climate change and save the planet if only the nations will band together and take the bold steps necessary. Jamie Williams, president of the Wilderness Society, is one of America's leading voices in the call for action to combat climate change. We checked in with him today to find out how bad is it? Is it already too late? And if not, what can we do about it? Jamie Williams, welcome to the Bill Press Pod. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So I want to talk about this UN report on climate change that came out last week. It starts off with a very dramatic statement, which is this, quote, "It is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere, ocean, and land." So does that mean at least we can accept that now everybody accepts the fact that climate change is real and human activity caused it?
I think we can. I think we can certainly, what's clear here is that there's scientific consensus. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change includes hundreds of the best scientists around the world on climate. This document is the definitive document approved by 195 countries. And as you said, it is clearer than it's ever been before that, as you said, unequivocal that not only is global warming happening, but that human activity is responsible, and especially the burning of fossil fuels, which have caused the accumulation of excessive carbon in the atmosphere at higher levels than in the last 2 million years. So I think the important thing now is to really take the kind of action that we're going to need to take so that the kind of extreme weather events and impacts that we're experiencing in all of our lives do not get worse.
What are the manifestations of climate change that that you see today, which are so evident?
Oh gosh, it's just it's getting worse every day. And I mean, just think about this summer. I mean, the incredible record-shattering heat wave in the Pacific Northwest with temperatures in British Columbia, of all places, of 121 degrees, the devastating drought and fires in the American West. 93% of the American West is in drought. California had their worst fire season last year, and they're on record to break that record this year. And then, of course, we're seeing unprecedented flooding in countries around the world, you know, in Germany and China, where they're seeing a 1 in 1,000 year events. So, and one of the things that the report really makes clear is that there's a really strong scientific evidence now that links the intensity of these extreme weather events to climate, and that these are only going to get worse in the coming decades.
And the other thing that I saw in the report, which is unique, I think, in this report, is that the report documents that this climate change, the results of it, the manifestations of it, if you will, are happening everywhere on the planet, right? In every corner of the globe.
Absolutely. You can't hide. There's no place you can hide from climate change on the planet now. This is truly impacting the health and safety and well-being of everyone on the planet, as well as a huge impact to biodiversity and millions of species that are being impacted. So it's not only an existential crisis that we're facing, but it's an urgent one in which we must act quickly. And I will add that there was a glimmer of hope in this report, which was that that if we do take, we collectively around the world take immediate and drastic actions to cut emissions over the coming decade, we could still meet the aspirational goal of the Paris Climate Agreement of not warming the planet more than 1.5 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. So this is really, we're seeing the impacts everywhere mm-hmm. around the world. We're feeling them, and they're deadly, and it's awful. And at the same time, there's hope that if we take immediate action now, we can stabilize the climate ultimately and still be on a pathway to a sustainable future.
Well, I was encouraged by that message of hope, but at the same time, it was tempered by their statement that if we don't act, it's just going to get a hell of a lot worse and a hell of a lot faster.
Right? It's accelerating. And that's why the Secretary General of the UN called this report in particular a code red for humanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is undermining life as we know it. And if we don't act at scale, the consequences are really could become catastrophic. So the importance of taking action is really important. And, we are seeing what's encouraging is that most countries around the world have not only signed the Paris Agreement, but have committed or in the process of committing to net zero by 2050, including the United States and President Biden. But of course, what's going to be really important are the tangible actions that we take to actually get there.
So if there is a human cause to climate change, there's also a possible human fix, right? I mean, maybe not for a complete human fix, but at least slow it down to a point where we can live with the consequences. So I guess is that sort of how you sum things up?
Absolutely. I mean, what we've got, I mean, it's fairly simple, even though we've got to be comprehensive about it, but essentially we just have to reduce our carbon emissions on a global level to something that the planet can sustain. And we've also got to protect nature and natural systems that naturally store and offset carbon so that we can get back into balance. And that's really what the Paris Agreement calls for.
So how much of it has to be focused on fossil fuels and either eliminating or reducing our dependency on fossil fuels? Is that the number one key goal here?
I would say it is the number one key goal. We've got to do both. We've got to reduce emissions and we've got to protect forests and natural systems. But absolutely, we have to achieve both of those goals. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, there is a question about whether, I mean, certainly at one time on this planet, humankind survived without fossil fuels, without the use of fossil fuels, but that's been a long time ago. Given today's technology, right, and today's economy, is it possible to have a fossil-free economy?
Well, I certainly think we can get very close to, and that's why I think net zero ultimately is the goal. I think we have the technologies in renewable energy. We're not just talking about shutting down our dependence on energy. What we're talking about is transitioning from one technology, which is around extracting and burning fossil fuels, to another, which is clean renewable energy, solar, wind, geothermal, which has been growing rapidly in this country. It's now over 10% of our electricity system. And if we really focused on investing in building this out and reduced the subsidies we have for fossil fuels, we could get to a clean electricity system by 2035, which is exactly what many states and what Biden is now calling for. So we've got to rapidly deploy renewable energy as we ramp down and phase out fossil fuels.
Right. So much of this, of course, requires government or legislative action. I think it was in the New York Times yesterday. I read an article where it's sort of a good news, bad news piece, Jamie. The good news was that there are almost no more climate deniers in the Republican Party. They don't go around like Jim Inhofe or whatever, denying climate change anymore. But what they do, however, do not accept, however, is the need to clamp down on fossil fuels or in any way put any more restrictions on the fossil fuel, on the oil and gas companies. That's not good enough, is it?
No, and it's not. And what the UN Secretary General said on this report is that if we don't ramp down aggressively fossil fuels, we will literally destroy their planet, or at least destroy our ability to live sustainably as we know on it if we don't do that. But we can do this in a way that transitions from one energy system to another, in a way that drives the economy and builds jobs and will be a very prosperous future for us economically, as well as protect our health and well-being and those of the species that we all depend on for our survival.
So there's a big summit coming up November, right, in Glasgow in Scotland, mm-hmm. where the nations, 195 nations or whatever, will convene again to talk about this problem and to commit to whatever action they're willing to take. I noticed in the report that the UN report came out last week again, they identify the top 10 producers of greenhouse gas emissions. So I just want to read the list to you. China, United States, the EU, India, Russia, Japan, Brazil, Indonesia, Iran, and Canada. Can't really count on all of them to come through, can we?
Well, I think, you know, we've got to continue to work with other countries through the kind of international agreements we've been building to get to a place where we are meeting climate targets on a global scale. And I think the Paris Agreement was very hopeful. I think we obviously need to build and strengthen that agreement in this next conference. But look, China is the biggest emitter, as you said, and mm-hmm. they've committed to net zero by 2060. We know that we're the second biggest emitter, and we've committed to net zero by 2050 and to cut half of our emissions by 2030. And I think if take significant actions here, both legislatively and within the Biden administration, we could actually achieve those goals. So every country is going to have to do its part. And I think the best way to get other countries to do their part is for us, as one of the biggest polluters in the world, to lead by example. We need to show global leadership in solving this crisis. And that's what really got us to Paris. And I think that that's what's going to get us to even stronger agreements, which is what we need.
I know a lot of people, myself, a lot of friends of mine, and yours, I'm sure, too, feel so frustrated by this because they're so concerned about the problem, but they see this is really that action has to happen at a governmental level or a national level. Is there anything that individuals can really do to help things along?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, we have to do everything, and individual choices do matter. I mean, first, you know, we have to transition to electric vehicles. So what kind of vehicle you buy matters. What kind of carbon footprint you have in your life? Do you fly all the time? So I think individual choices absolutely matter and help drive demand for the right solutions. Secondly, I think, yes, governments matter. We've got to solve this at a systemic government level, but governments reflect the will of the people. And so it's really important for people to advocate for the solutions that we need. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity right now to put the United States on a sustainable path to solving the climate crisis. But that's going to take significant legislation and action by the Biden administration, which is all in process right now, which, by the way, is happening because of the kind of advocacy we've been seeing from people across the country. But that needs to continue to be strong. So individual choices, yes, are important. Advocacy is really important because at the end of the day, we need governmental action at a systemic level to really make the difference.
Our guest on the Bill Press Pod today, Jamie Williams, is president of the Wilderness Societies, one of the nation's loudest voices in urging action, swift action to deal with climate change. And we're talking about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, their report for the United Nations that came out last week. And let's talk about where the Biden administration is doing, what the president is proposing, and whether that's going to get us where we need to go. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Jamie Williams here on the Bill Press Pod. And for today's podcast, talking about climate change with Jamie Williams from the Wilderness Society, I can't think of anything better to recommend that you check out the Wilderness Society, see the important work that they do, and lend them your support. They've been around since 1935 with a very simple mission: uniting people to protect America's wild places. I've been a big supporter of the Wilderness Society for many years. They do great, great work, so important. So check out their website at wilderness.org. They are protecting 109 million acres of wilderness in 44 states of the Union. They deserve our support. Again, the website is wilderness.org, and there's a link to the Wilderness Society website in the episode notes for today's podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. Today's podcast focusing on the most serious threat facing the planet. It's climate change. And it was all brought to a focus last week with the release of a report by hundreds of scientists through the United Nations, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Jamie Williams is president of the Wilderness Society, our guest on the podcast today. Jamie, before we get to what President Biden has proposed, to what extent did Donald Trump set things back over the last 4 years?
Well, I would say significantly. I mean, he was a climate change denier. He did everything he could to unwind the advances that President Obama had made on climate by threatening to take us out of the Paris Climate Agreement and by accelerating oil and gas development around the country, and weakening pollution standards and other sort of key standards. So certainly the Trump administration did quite a bit to move us backwards, but I think we're back on track and have the opportunity now to actually make historic progress at the scale that's necessary to meet the problem with the kind of solutions that President Biden is proposing and that are being considered in Congress right now.
Is the Biden administration doing what they need to do to reverse some of those steps that that Trump took, including some of the EPA regulations that passed under Obama that Trump pulled the plug on?
Yeah, I mean, Congress and Biden reinstated the methane rule, Obama methane rules, which is enormously important because methane is even 84 more times more potent than carbon, and we have no technologies to capture it now. So that would just be, and you know, they put a pause on all oil and gas leasing activity until they can do a review of the program. And of course, they're doing a variety of other things to restore the more than 100 environmental important policies for our health and well-being that were weakened during the Trump administration. But most significantly, President Biden campaigned on the most ambitious climate agenda of any president. He not only has put us back into the Paris Climate Agreement, mm-hmm. but he's committed to cut half of our carbon emissions by 2030 and to put us on a path to net zero by 2050. And also significantly to get to 100% clean electricity by 2035. So these are really critical goals that would put us on a sustainable pathway to stabilizing the climate if we can now achieve them. So it's been a really strong start, but now is where the rubber hits the road with the kind of actions that are being considered.
Yeah, I mean, 2030, I saw the president last week, and of course, he's a car guy. He loved getting out there and driving that the electric Jeep, right? And but that's a pretty ambitious goal. I mean, 2030 is just around the corner, right? So are we within the realm of realism here?
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, we need to be. I mean, what's real is the devastating impacts that's happening from climate change. So we've got to take extraordinary measures to meet the urgency of the crisis. And I think we can do it with the kind of investments that have been proposed in the reconciliation budget, mm-hmm. And the infrastructure package combined. We absolutely need both of those things, which, if successful, would create a clean electricity standard nationwide. More than 30 states have actually established some form of a clean electricity standard. But if we truly source all of our electricity from clean and renewable energy by 2035, and then we work to electrify transportation, that gets us more than halfway to solving the problem. So there's a reason why, yes, he loves cars, but electric cars in particular, but you got to combine that with cleaning up and decarbonizing our electricity grid. But those two things combined could be huge, and that's part of the promise of a big part of the promise of the legislation that's being proposed right now.
I want to get to the decarbonization in a minute, but the other thing that's important here, isn't it, to support the electric car movement are charging stations, right? There are damn few of them today, you have to admit.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got to, this is a huge, this is about building a green infrastructure, and that's included in the current infrastructure bill as well as additional investments, mm-hmm. The other bill. But ultimately, yes, we need to build the capacity for electric transmission that we need in our electricity grid. We need more charging stations. We need to continue to support with tax incentives and other investments, the expansion of electric vehicles. And that, but it's happening fairly rapidly. I think, you know, already it's amazing to just see what you see out there in terms of the number of cars that are being used. But we need the infrastructure for it. That's what's key. And that's what's important about these bills.
There have been attempts. I remember Congressman Henry Waxman, when he was in the Congress, with for carbon pricing legislation, which, as I understand it, means that companies would have to basically pay to pollute, right? Pay per ton or whatever of carbon they're emitting from their power plants. Is that the answer, and is that legislatively doable?
Well, that's not what's being proposed right now. There's a variety of different issues with that approach, but I think what's on the table right now is to both through incentives and through regulation to drive forward a clean electricity grid that would really put us on a path to decarbonizing our economy. So certainly there are components in it that would raise fees for fossil fuels and imports of that kind. So there is some carbon pricing, mm-hmm. But ultimately what we want to make sure is to deliver climate solutions in a way that are equitable and that aren't regressive and that really address many of the inequities for communities that have suffered the impact of pollution and who deserve to benefit from the jobs that can be created.
Right.
Exactly.
Just as a tangent here, I'm just curious. We're talking particularly wind. We're talking particularly solar, transitioning to those sources, renewable sources of energy. Is anybody talking about nuclear power anymore in terms of generation of electricity?
Well, it's a component of our system now,
right.
But I think
we're not building any more new ones, right?
Right. Yeah. No, I think that and there's obviously a lot of environmental and human risk with that, as we've seen with some of the accidents. But I think the real focus is on renewable energy and the potential there. Now, one potential I would like to talk about is just the importance of our public lands.
I was going to ask you about that because if I could just jump in, I saw on your website that public lands, we can do a lot around public lands in terms of meeting our goals for climate change, which raised the big question to me, how? What do you mean by that?
Well, most people don't realize, I mean, close to a third of this country is owned by all of us in the form of public lands, but the thing that I think most people have no idea of is that 25% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions are actually sourced from coal, oil, and gas developed from public land. So, and considering that the U.S. Whoa. Is the second largest contributor of emissions to the world, the way public lands are managed right now is actually a huge part of the problem, but could become a huge part of the solution. And this is within President Biden's control because the administration controls and manages our public lands and water. So they have it within their discretion and power to align public lands with their climate goals. They should move to establish a net zero goal for public lands by 2030. And they could get there by phasing out fossil fuel development on public lands. And at the same time, protecting and restoring really important forests and natural areas that store, breathe in and store and offset much of our carbon emissions.
So when you talk about the public lands responsible for 25% of our nation's carbon emissions, these are oil and gas developments on public lands, right? That have been allowed and licensed on public lands.
Correct. National park. Yeah, you know, when most people think of public lands, they think of parks and wilderness areas, and those are protected from development. But that's only a small portion of America's public lands, and the majority of our public lands actually have been open for energy development and actually subject to extensive oil and gas drilling and coal development, which is what's resulted in those emissions.
So this is the Bureau of Land Management, correct?
Correct.
Right. And I saw on your website, I think it was 90% of the BLM lands are open to oil and gas drilling?
That's correct.
I mean, they're a big oil and gas company, basically.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely. I mean, they're our biggest energy producer in the country. So
who knew? Right. I didn't.
Most people, exactly. And this is within the control of any administration, whoever's the president. So there's a huge opportunity to get your own house in order and show global leadership on climate now just by the policies the administration sets on the lands and waters that it manages. And, you know, these places are also really important for wildlife to adapt to climate change by protecting big connected landscapes, but also protecting floodplains, open space, forest, coasts serve as really important buffers to communities to sustain the impacts from climate change.
I think it was on your website too. I saw that there are already some examples of a different use. For there's a big solar fields going in some places too. One particularly outside of Las Vegas.
Yeah, but, well, most of the solar is in the desert southwest on public lands. And first of all, I should say it's really there's a big opportunity with public lands for renewable energy, solar and wind. There's over about 100 projects on them right now. It's really important that they be done responsibly and sited in ways that avoid impacts to wildlife and to communities. But that's you know, the process that Obama really started with a program called Smart from the Start. And that's one we can build on both on public lands and offshore and waters as well.
Has the Biden administration committed itself or made any steps toward redirecting the use of public lands?
Absolutely. I mean, they've committed to protect public lands, to restore the protections Trump took away, and to protect other special places, but also to reform the oil and gas program and align it and their pursuit of renewable energy to align with their climate goals. And they've made commitments to expanding offshore wind, for example, to get us to 30 gigawatts by 2030. And they could do something similar on the terrestrial, on public lands as well.
So in the general issue of climate change, I remember once asking, speaking of foreign policy, when I interviewed Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, whether she was an optimist or a pessimist, she said, "I'm an optimist who worries a lot." is that where you would put yourself on the issue of climate change?
Absolutely. And I love that statement. Yeah, I think the most important asset we must have is our optimism, our belief in a better future if we take action to get there. And we can. And yes, we're suffering big impacts that we're seeing today from climate change that is certainly going to continue. But I think we all want to leave a better world for our children. And we can do that if we take the kind of actions that we know science has told us we must take and can take, which will make the difference in the long run.
I don't want to let you go without giving you a minute to tell us about the work of the Wilderness Society and why that's important. I've been a big supporter since the days when I got into environmental politics with Governor Jerry Brown in California. What's the main mission of the Wilderness Society? What are you up to? What's important? What are your main priorities?
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, the Wilderness Society works with communities to protect America's public wild lands that are so core to our health. Think about it. These lands and natural areas source our clean air, our clean water, and give us access to nature that's so important to our physical and mental and well-being. So our focus, and one of the things we've really come to recognize is just how important public lands are for addressing the biggest challenges we face today of climate change, which we have talked about in this program, and how public lands can address that. Also, racial inequities and the enormous inequities that we have been seeing and amplified by the pandemic, but which we see in public lands as well. We want to ensure that public lands can equitably benefit all communities. Over a third of Americans don't even have access, walking access to a park, and yet we know how much trees, forests cover parks, and being in them improve our health and well-being and emotional well-being too. So equitable access to the outdoors, especially for communities of color and other communities who have not had equitable access, is really important to us. And then ultimately protecting a connected system of lands throughout the country to sustain the incredible wildlife and biodiversity that we have in this country. The public lands really make up the backbone of our biggest protected areas and the opportunity to connect them together so wildlife on the move can thrive into the future in the face of climate change and other threats. So those are really our big focuses.
Yeah, well, I remember how much I valued and how much I got out of spending some time in the wilderness in the Trinity Alps in California. So everybody, I would hope, would have that same opportunity. Thanks to your good work, Jamie, at the Wilderness Society. Thank you for that, for your leadership in the Wilderness Society. And thanks for joining our podcast today and onward with the fight against climate change. Thanks, Jamie.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
And that's it for today's podcast with Jamie Williams of the Wilderness Society, talking about the big United Nations report on climate change, a wake-up call, if there ever was one, to take climate change seriously and to get to work at the national level and the individual level doing something about it. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back at the end of the week with our roundtable with three top Washington reporters. We'll take a look at how President Biden has handled the disastrous end to the war in Afghanistan, and the latest progress on those two big infrastructure bills winding their way through Congress. That and whatever else is happening this week, we'll tackle it in this week's roundtable. Coming up next on the Bill Press Pod. Stay safe, stay sane, stay strong, and come back and see us on Friday with this week's roundtable.